Hi, everybody. This is Tracy Malone, the founder of NarcissistAbuseSupport.com, a global resource for finding anything that you need to do to help you learn about narcissists and help you heal. We've got free ebooks, we've got free handouts, we've got all kinds of juicy niblets from free legal help information to domestic violence agencies and the gamut in between. So I am here to talk to you today about the 11 most common abuse strategies that narcissists use. And that sounds pretty common, but here's the cool part. Why do they do it? What's the purpose of using gaslighting? What's the purpose of them lying and manipulating and all of the other things that they do? My guest today has written a new book called If I'd Only I'd Known, right? It is Chelsea Brooke Cole, and we are going to welcome her to talk about this chapter of her book. I was lucky enough to read it as a manuscript, and I loved it so much, I called her up and said, let's do this chapter. I think people will really love hearing the why. I can't tell you how many clients of mine are like, but why are they doing that? Why do they have to lie? We've been married for 49 years. This is going to help you understand it. So let's go welcome Chelsea, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome, Chelsea. So nice to get to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm so excited about your book. And today we are going to talk about the 11 most common abuse strategies that narcissists use and why. But why don't you do a little introduction about who you are just to let my audience know that?
Sure. So I'm a licensed psychotherapist, certified partner trauma therapist, specializing in narcissistic abuse and relational trauma. I always tell my clients that I get it on many levels. I'm not a therapist or coach who can't resonate with what narcissistic abuse is like. Just to give you a little bit of background on me, I kind of grew up in a home where I had a very secure and empathetic and compassionate mom. I would have described my dad as quite emotionally neglectful and cold and withdrawn. I remember seeing him in public and like this other facade came out, this other person like smiling and laughing with people. And I remember thinking as a kid, like, what is going on? Why can't you just be like that at home? Why do you seem miserable? And love and support was very conditional. So I always felt the need to try to earn love, to be perfect. So going into adulthood, that was really my expectation for romantic relationships, for relationships in general. I was very used to feeling like I had to be good enough, or I had to keep trying to earn love. So really set the foundation for a trauma bond. So I've had relationships with different narcissists, different types of narcissists. I continue to have to interact with them in different ways. So I tell my clients on many levels, I get it, I understand it, and I'm so grateful really to have a platform now to be able to help people understand and heal from narcissistic abuse.
Yeah, thank you. Now, where are you located?
I'm in Tennessee. I am like a little bit out of Nashville. So it's getting very hot now time of year.
My. Yes, it is. All right. So let's get into this interview. And in your book, you've listed these 11 things. And the first one was belittling and criticizing. And, you know, they make fun of your hobbies. They make fun of, like, I have groups of women and, like, we always talk about how you load the dishwasher. Can't do it right. Well, you should put the forks this way and all the forks go in one bin and you're doing it wrong. And no matter what you do, you can't do anything right. So will you explain to us how they use belittling and criticism and also what's the purpose of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really what I wanted to highlight in my book. I do break down narcissistic abuse on all the different levels and not just what it is, but why. Because I think that's the part that stumps so many survivors and keeps us stuck is because we're trying to make sense of these behaviors that don't make sense. And when you haven't had a relationship with a narcissist, or you don't realize yet that you're dealing with a narcissist, then you assume that they look at the world and think of it in the same way you do. Like, no one purposely wants to cause problems in their relationship, right? Like, why would you want to do that? Or why would you purposely criticize someone or gaslight someone? It must just be a misunderstanding, a miscommunication. So I really wanted to help people understand from a narcissistic perspective, what is the purpose? Why are they doing this? So criticism, if a narcissist does nothing better than criticizing you. I mean, they will criticize, like you said, your hobbies, your interests, the way you dress, how you do your hair. Like, nothing is off limits for what a narcissist will criticize. And the crazy thing about criticism is that when you call them out on it, when you say, hey, you're always like criticizing the way that I do this, or you ask them to stop, or you point it out, then they make the fact that you're calling them out on that the problem. So you're never going to catch a narcissist and get them to admit what they're doing. They're just going to really double down on it. And that's where criticisms can really turn into gaslighting, where now you're made the problem because you're calling it out. You know, criticisms can sound like, you're wearing that, or do you really need to be giving weight loss advice? Or, you know, I was only asking a question, don't be so sensitive. Or my favorite, I was only joking. And so narcissists criticize everything about you, the way that they do things, the way that you do things. And the purpose of that is really to feel superior, to feel entitled and better than, because when they are criticizing you, they're really putting space between who they are and who you are, as if you're less than them, beneath them. So it's a quick way for them to kind of reorient and regulate their emotions. If they're having a bad day, or if they're low on supply, or things aren't going well for them, if they can criticize you, then they don't have to necessarily achieve anything or do anything successful. They just feel better than, because they put you down.
Right, right. And it's all about control, right? You know, when I was first not even engaged to my ex-husband, him and his family criticized the way I dressed. And while I was just dressing in cabby clothes and things I could find in stores, they were like, not appropriate. Ooh, but out of love, it was so subtle. And it was just like, well, you know, for this event, let's try to get you something new. And then eventually they threw away all my clothes and were like, it's all not good enough, girl. And I was like, what? And then they played that up as if it was sort of a, well, you're the princess and look, you're going to get all these new clothes. And I had no idea it was control. But none of those clothes looked like me, felt like me, or made me happy. And again, it was sort of get into our mold. And when I would say, I don't want those, I don't want Prada shoes with pointy, stubby heels, that's not going to ever work for me. Yeah. Well, you're an ingrate. How dare you not accept this great gift that my mother wants to give you? And I'd be like, okay, but it was started with the criticism. You're not good enough. You're not dressing the right way. They would even say things, well, you know, this is how we dress and this is what you have to do. So it was so subtle, but it epped in and it took away my self-esteem.
Yeah, it gets in there and it erodes your sense of self. I mean, you, like you said, you came into this family, into this relationship, like, this is who I am and this is how I dress and this is how I present myself. And over time, you're told that's not okay. And then you're made to feel guilty, like you're doing something wrong if you don't want to go along. That actually reminds me of some of my relationships. I remember before I met my ex's family, he started critiquing the way I said things, like, well, you probably shouldn't say this, or they're not going to like that you use this phrase. Like, I'm just letting you know, because I don't want to like embarrass you. You know, I don't want you to feel embarrassed when you go there. So I'm just letting you know, like, this is how we talk. And like this phrase or this thing you say, they might not, you know, get it. It's fine. I get it. You know, I understand it's fine. You can use that. But my family, they might not like that you say it like that or say certain things. So it was framed in a way of like, I'm protecting you. And then I was like, okay, I guess I'll, you know, in my mind, I guess I'll be respectful, like, because that's the kind of person I am, you know, to think like, oh, okay, I'm going to meet this family. Like, I want to be respectful. I want to make a good impression. I think anybody does. And then the narcissist is creating this space, though, where they're like slowly conditioning you to, like you said, fit this mold that they need you to.
Absolutely. I mean, I really think that you might have been like dating my ex-husband. The same exact kind of control and that sort of you know, well, if you just do it this way, and it was so subtle and with love, like you're saying, but you know, honey, yeah. I understand it. I love you. And it's just like, when we're with them, let's try to turn that dial and not be you, but be something that they want. And like, mm-hmm. we don't think about that because we're liking this person and
yeah.
okay, I can accommodate. That's kind of weird, but that's the beginning, right?
Yes. And that's what I think is so important to understand about narcissistic abuse is it happens so subtly that you think the insecurities or the symptoms and the things you're experiencing are you instead of what's happening to you. Mm-hmm. It's so insidious the way that it gets in and starts to erode your sense of self and your sense of self-trust to the point at which you don't know yourself anymore at the end of this relationship. You don't know how you feel. You don't know what you think. You don't even know what your preferences are anymore because over time you have not been allowed to be you.
And that's what the biggest thing, once people are through the funnel of hell, I call it, you know, where they're just figuring it out. And like, then at the end, they're just like, but I don't know who I am. I don't know who, what I like. I don't know anything about myself because they have surrendered that. And, you know, mm-hmm. some ways given it away where we just went, okay, I'll wear those funny clothes. I'll dress like you want me to. And we fall in line like little Stepford wives.
Yeah. And yeah. It's really interesting to see looking back, but like you said, you don't see it at the time.
No, absolutely not. All right. Let's go to number two. You're ready? Okay. Number two is gaslighting. And in your book, I wrote a quote from some of the different parts. You wrote, gaslighting isn't just lying. It's lying and making believe that you're crazy, making you believe that you're crazy. So can you share an explanation of it? What does mm-hmm. it sound like? What's the purpose of it?
Mm-hmm. So when you're being gaslighted, you feel like you're going crazy. You start second guessing yourself, having lots of doubt. You almost feel like you and this other person are living in two different realities. Mm-hmm. And you start to feel like you need to, or you actually do start writing things down just to make sure you're remembering things correctly, because you are questioning your memory, your capabilities, your mental sanity in general. And I always like to highlight that gaslighting is a process. It's not something that happens one time, because that's something, a pet peeve of mine in society these days, is gaslighting is thrown around. Like, you have a different opinion than me, you're gaslighting me. And it's not that. So it is a process. And the first step in that is that there has to be some form of relationship there. There has to be some kind of trust or familiarity or likability with this person. So if you meet a new person or a new acquaintance and they say, well, the sky is purple. No, that like not. And you don't think anything about it. You go on about your day. Like, there's no relationship there. That person doesn't really have the ability to gaslight you at that point. So there has to be some form of trust. The next step is the lying, is the flat out denial of reality. Narcissists will lie about what they said, what they did, what you did, what you agreed on. They will rewrite history in a way and say, we never agreed on that. That never happened. And that's where a lot of people get caught in thinking, okay, so it's a miscommunication. It's a misunderstanding. They're just not remembering it the same way. So I know what I'll do. I'll go and I'll make a list and I'll keep up with everything. And I'll get really good at writing things down and like keeping our text messages, or maybe I'll record conversations or make notes so that I make sure to remember it. And then I'll present it to them and we'll get this worked out. And that's where a lot of people are hit with the hard reality that it doesn't matter what proof you show a narcissist. So a genuine liar, if you show them proof, might say, yeah, I lied about that. Like, you caught me. Here's the proof. Okay. A narcissist or gaslighter will double down on the lie and then make you crazy for it. So that's the process, or that's the ultimate end or purpose of gaslighting, is they'll say things like, are you serious? You kept all these text messages. What is wrong with you? Are you crazy? Like, what are you doing? So they reflect back and make the problem that you've been so crazy, like organizing all this and keeping all this information, like something is wrong with you, rather than ever admitting that they've lied. And that's like the crazy making cycle of gaslighting.
Right. Absolutely. And again, it's that never happened. This, you know, it's just, insidious form that mm-hmm. does make you crazy. And again, if you are doubting your own reality, you're doubting yourself. You can't trust yourself. So it's really eroding so many of our self-loving mechanisms of self-care and, you know, trusting ourselves, trusting our instincts, that it ebbs away and it takes it. So if gaslighting is not lying, it is lying with a purpose, right? What is the third thing we have on the thing is lying, just lying. And you wrote in your book, there's nothing a narcissist won't lie about if it benefits them in some way. And I went and looked at my book and I'm like, well, I said, if their lips were moving, they're probably lying. We know a lot of narcissists lie, but what is the purpose of it?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. All narcissists are gaslighters. Not all gaslighters are narcissists technically. So if you're dealing with a narcissist and they're gaslighting you, it's a lying, but mixed in with all the crazy making. And the ultimate end is because a narcissist wants to get inside your head. They want to become the filter through which you see the world because they know that being inside your head is the most powerful place they can be. And so the most insidious forms of like gaslighting and lying that I've seen are these statements that are crafted in a way to feign caring. Like, you seem really stressed. Maybe you should get some help. Or you've sure been having a lot of anxiety lately. Maybe you should go see someone about that. And some narcissists are very arrogant when they say that. And some come across as very genuine and caring. Mm-hmm. So let's say you go to therapy and you tell the therapist about your ruminations, that you can't sleep, that you're really feeling foggy all the time, that you're withdrawing from friends, that you're not as productive. Because if you're being narcissistically abused, probably are experiencing a lot of those things. And then let's say you get diagnosed with generalized anxiety or mild to moderate depression, and the narcissist finds out about this. Well, they're going to have one of two reactions. One, they'll be super arrogant about it and say, see, I told you, you have all these issues. If you could ever get your anxiety under control, then we could really make a good relationship. You know, this could work. Or a narcissist takes it and becomes a savior. Like, I'm going to be here for you during your time of need or with your mental health issues. And then they look like the savior to everyone else. And they use it as a form of supply because they're here for you and they're supporting you through this. And so that's the ultimate aim of gaslighting, is you don't trust yourself anymore. Mm-hmm. And so then you started turning more to the narcissist to make sense of things, because they always look like they have everything together. Mm-hmm. And the saddest thing is they are the reason you're sick in the first place.
Yeah, that's the truth. You wrote a line that I wrote down again. I just love these. They don't care that they're lying. Showing them proof or arguing with them will only incite their shame and rage cycle, where they will blame you for causing the problems because you're the one calling them out. I love that line. It was very, very helpful too, because people, do they know they're lying? Do they know?
Yes.
Right. That's always like the dead hard question. What do you tell your clients when they ask you that? Do they know they're lying?
Mm-hmm. Well, two things. I mean, I think one, if someone's behaviors are hurtful, you know, does it really matter if they're a total narcissist? If someone is treating you abusively or they're being harmful in some way, then that is enough reason to have an issue with, you know, how they're treating you. And really the second thing is that, hold on, let's pause for a moment. Another thought and I forgot. hold on just a second. Tell me the question again.
I asked,
what do I tell clients
when they say, do they know they're lying?
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yes. Okay. So the second thing I tell clients when they ask, you know, do they know that they're lying, is how do they know how to love bomb you or hoover you if they didn't know what you needed? So a lot of narcissists will feed back to you like in this hoover phase, which we can get into the narcissistic cycle of abuse, but that's when they want to pull you back in, or they make, you know, these promises about how things are going to be different in the future. They feed back to you at times what you have said you needed from them. So how can you say that they don't know when you're telling them, when you're saying, hey, I have a problem with your inconsistencies or your lies, or this isn't adding up, or I'm feeling really unheard or like dismissed. You're telling them what you need. So how can we say that they don't know?
Right. Right. That makes sense. All right. Let's go to our next one, which is manipulation. And, you know, my last narcissist, not my ex-husband, my last one was such a manipulator. He had three of us at the same time. And we all had roles. Like I was the official babysitter and found out that when he was with the other one, he told me he was on a business trip and could you watch the kids? And I would watch the kids and he took her to a hotel down the street, but would send me pictures of him in Chicago going, oh, I wish you were here. So he was such a manipulator. Each one of us had a role. One of them was a mediator and he was still having legal issues with his ex-wife. She was helping him there. The other one was a massage therapist and he got free massages every day. So he manipulated each one of us in a different way at the same time, which was fascinating to learn about. But let's talk about manipulation.
Yeah, that's a lot of juggling, man.
He was so tired, and now I know why.
Right, that's a lot of lying and like manipulation to keep straight. But manipulation covers so many things. I call it like the narcissist ground game, because I mean, this is where they thrive. A narcissist is manipulating you from day one. You just don't recognize it. And it can take a few forms. It can include coercive control, triangulation, and then mislabeling your intentions and emotions is another really common way narcissists will manipulate you. So a coercive control, you know, those acts of threat, humiliation, intimidation used to instill fear or to control you. You know, this can sound like those sinister statements that they make, like no one will believe you, or, you know, you're lucky that I'm a good person because I don't know anyone else that would put up with this. Or it's the statements that they might sound okay on the surface, but something about them leaves you wondering, like, how far would they go? Like, I think I know this person, but the way they're saying this, it's like almost, I don't know what they would do if I step out of line. And it's kind of scary. It can also look like them isolating you or monitoring you, saying things like, I saw you on Facebook earlier, what were you doing? And so you get this sense of they're always tracking you. They put GPS on you, like they know where you are. I can't tell you how many of my clients either suspect or know that their narcissistic spouse has put cameras in the house because they know things about them that they're doing throughout the day or who they're talking to on the phone. And the narcissist would have no way of knowing this. Like, it's really strange. Yeah. So there's got to be, you know, some way that they're monitoring them. Triangulation is another really common manipulation tool. And that's when a narcissist becomes the go-between or the mediator between two people. So you're no longer talking directly to that person. You have to trust that the narcissist is correctly interpreting what that other person is saying. And inevitably, they are not. They're either completely misconstruing it, or a lot of times narcissists completely make up what other people say. And they, you know, triangulate you by what they say to you about others and what they say to others about you. Narcissists are notorious for making up lies about you and spreading them to other people about how you're insecure or crazy or jealous. And they're telling you a lot of times the untrue things that your friends or your family is saying about you. And you're like, I've never heard them say that. I don't think that happened. But then they put enough doubt in your mind of like, well, I wonder if they did say that, or maybe they are mad at me for that thing. And so that's another way that they also end up isolating you, because you feel like you don't know even the people around you anymore because of that.
Yeah. And triangulation is a mother narcissist, like tool belt, you know, 101, mm-hmm. Triangulate the kids, triangulate the other parent. I mean, it's just so confusing, but again, it's a tactic. And our next one is blame shifting. And I'm going to read another excerpt from the book.
Okay.
You bring up something that's bothering you. They blame you for ruining their day. You ask where they went after work. They tell you you're crazy, obsessive, and controlling. And you ask to schedule a date night, and they criticize you for never being satisfied. So talk about blame shifting. That sounds, obviously the examples are pretty darn strong. It's easy to know why are they doing it.
Yeah. Well, I think blame shifting can be one of the ways they gaslight you. I mean, so many of these abusive strategies really fall under gaslighting. But I describe it like narcissist blame shift because when they look in life's proverbial mirror, they don't see anyone staring back at them. And they don't see their self-reflection because they don't self-reflect. They don't see the effects that their behaviors have on others. They only see your reaction to them. So they have no one left to blame for the issues, the problems in the relationship, the things going on, but you. So in a narcissist's mind, if you have a problem with the way they're treating you, that is literally your problem, which is why they have no problem blaming you for everything because they genuinely think like this is on you.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think the blame shifting is so corrosive to the victim. Because they're sitting here and they get into the defense mode where I didn't do that and I never said that and mm-hmm. and you're trying to like justify with you're trying to reason with someone who can't possibly hear you.
No, doesn't want to be reasonable, isn't looking for a solution, which is so hard to wrap our mind around.
Yeah, and I have a line in my book that is in order to get a divorce, they basically have to rewrite history, making them into mm-hmm. the hero and the victim, right? So a lot of this blame shifting is to make them the victim of you, right? You're the one that did it. Yeah. It was your fault. You should have done this. You should have thought of that. Why didn't you do that, right? All of those things are all going right back to that core mm-hmm. of they can't do anything wrong. So it's got to be you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that really reminds me like going right into the smear campaign. I mean, mm-hmm. that's essentially what's happening. So we can talk about that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why don't you go ahead and do smear?
Okay.
I know that's a couple numbers down, but let's do it.
Okay. So the smear campaign has one overarching goal, which is to ruin your credibility, believability, and reputation, particularly amongst those closest to you. So a lot of smear campaigns are happening during and after the relationship, like you were talking about, but we don't always think of them or realize they're going on during the relationship because you think mm-hmm. you're developing a relationship with this person and you can trust them. You have no idea that they're going behind your back, spreading lies about you, you know, ruining relationships and things. For example, some of my clients have told me like a narcissistic wife who really doesn't want to visit her family, instead of saying that because that would make her look bad, tells her family that her husband is so abusive and controlling, he won't give her any gas money. And he has no idea that she is saying this, but the family's like, that's so awful. It's going all around the family. Like, this is so awful. He's so abusive. He won't even give her enough gas money to come visit us. Like, what kind of person is this? And then they start treating him, you know, differently, obviously, because they believe their daughter. And none of that's even true. Or you're at work and then a colleague tells a boss that you're gunning for their job, even though that's not true. And then the boss starts to treat you differently. So you can really tell that a smear campaign is going on during the relationship when people have these preconceived notions about you and you don't know why. Mm-hmm. And of course, the narcissist doesn't say they're doing anything. They'll actually give you reasons that these people are upset with you. Well, it's because you didn't call them back and they're still mad at you. Or, you know, so-and-so is still upset with you, or they confided in me that they have this issue with you. So you're going around trying to fix relationships that narcissists are breaking.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is the part that people are so wrapped up around because they lose friends. And this yeah. these seeds have been planted much longer than before the divorce. The neighbors have been told, oh, she drinks a lot. Mm-hmm. You've seen her at parties. I'm worried about her. She's an alcoholic. And it escalates. It starts with, oh, you had two drinks at the you know, party, and all of a sudden you're an alcoholic. And then the divorce comes along and they can pull that card out. See, I told you she was just so bad. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and snowballs. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for a victim to hear. Like, even when they accuse you and smear mm-hmm. you and say you're a bad parent. That's like the kiss of death mm-hmm. for a good parent. They're just like, they're defending their life and their children are at stake. And yet this has already been planted for many, many months or years, even before the actual mm-hmm. separation happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's especially damaging when it's about values you hold closely, like being a certain kind of person or being a parent. And it's part of why narcissistic abuse is so toxic and why it harms people so much is because it's multi-layered. I mean, it's a multi-layered attack on your sense of self, like a total dismantling of who you are and what you believe you're worth. And it's happening so insidiously. And not only is it happening in the relationship, but because the narcissist is going around smear campaigning, spreading these lies about you, at the end, you know, you've lost a lot of relationships along the way too that you didn't even know were being eroded.
Exactly. And again, it's sort of the casualties of war, or you mm-hmm. think they are, but they're really the casualties of their relationship because it has been planted well before you even know about it. So mm-hmm. again, it's a scary, scary thing that they do. And anyone who's lived through it, you know, feels the horror of having to deal with these lies, because a smear is just a lie that has been spread, right? I mean, a lie is a lie. Mm-hmm. They tell you the lie. And then when they tell others it's a lie, it becomes the smear. So it's, you know, multi-pronged lying, gaslighting to corrupt your brain, lie. I mean, we could just go on all the different ways they lie and the different strategies. But our next one on our list is passive aggressiveness.
Mm-hmm. This is the unseen abuse. It's in all the ways narcissists communicate to you that they don't like you, even without saying a word. And it too can encompass a lot of things. It might look like publicly voicing concerns for your mental health, even though they know nothing is wrong. For example, let's say you've been working a lot of hours at work and you've just haven't been able to connect with your family as much as you'd like, but you finally get to a family event. And the narcissist knows this. They knows how much you've been working. You've just been on some really strict deadlines. But then your parents criticize you. You haven't been calling us. You haven't been checking in. What's going on? And, you know, then the narcissist is like, yeah, you know, you really should be in touch with your family. Like, they look like they're supporting you in front of the family when they know very well that it's just because you've been on tight work deadlines. You know, they might be brutally honest and say really mean things, but kind of cover it up, you know, say it as a joke. Like, I was only joking. Why do you have to be so sensitive about things? A huge way that a lot of narcissists will be passive aggressive is forgetting important events or forgetting things that are important to you. Let's say that your family's coming into town and you won't have time to clean up the house before you get there, but the narcissist will be there. So you're like, hey, could you please pick up the house? Family's coming in. And they say, sure, no problem. You get to the house later. It's a total wreck. You pull the narcissist aside and say, hey, what happened? Like, we were texting throughout the day. You said you were going to do this. And they like blame you and say, well, I forgot. Like, what did you expect from me? Like, don't freak out about this. What is wrong with you? Everything has to be your way. And you know, it's partly gaslighting as well. I think everything comes back to gaslighting. They'll show up late to important events like your graduation or something you worked really hard for. They'll find these subtle ways to kind of ruin these special moments or important things to you. And they can also act sad and upset and then deny what, you know, that anything is wrong. So you'll call them out, hey, what's wrong? And they'll be very passive aggressive and say, well, you should know, or if you cared about me, then you would already know what's wrong. And so it's like super disorienting because it can happen in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely powerful. Contempt is our next one on the list. We're almost done, folks. Tell us about contempt.
So contempt is a strong dislike or disdain for something. In a healthy context, we can feel contempt toward abuse or genocide or heinous crimes, like things that we should have a strong dislike for. However, narcissists experience contempt for everything that they know they should be, but aren't. A lot of people experience a narcissist's contempt as feeling like the narcissist hates them. Like, I know a lot of my clients will say, they look at me, it's just like they're throwing darts with their eyes at me. Like, they just look at me like I'm so disgusting to them. And of course, over time, that really erodes your sense of self-worth too. Like, this person is treating you like they're just disgusted with you. But if you're experiencing that, that really means that a narcissist is projecting their contempt onto you. And, you know, the purpose of that is a narcissist has a lot of self-shame that they don't deal with. And they just really don't know how to regulate their own shame. So when they see you being kind or compassionate or generous or patient, and you're all the things that they're not, that will incite their shame. But rather than deal with that, they immediately have a defense mechanism that comes in and projects that onto you. So they want to belittle you, criticize you. They will put down your hobbies. They'll make fun of your religious beliefs. They'll try to, you know, dismiss and undermine and criticize those things that are really good about you to try to make themselves feel better and deal with the fact that they aren't those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think them hating everything that's good about you is the most important thing for people.
Yeah.
Because it's not that what you're doing is bad. They just can't be it. So that creates this contempt.
Right. Exactly. It's really not you per se. It's not personal, although of course it feels very personal. It's what you're representing to the narcissist, though. It's what you invoke in them. It's not about you. It's not that you're bad or that anything is wrong with you. It's that the narcissist is in some way being intimidated by, you know, what you are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, we're almost done. Silent treatment. This one is like, it to my clients that get the silent treatment, it's worse than physical abuse. Those that have been physically abused say, I would rather be punched than go through this in the same house, in the same kitchen. It is so rude. And why are they doing it? What's the strategy? Why are they doing this?
It is super painful because the same part of your brain that it lights up when you're in physical pain lights up when you're in emotional pain. So there's a reason that we feel in physical pain when someone is just purposely ignoring you with intent to harm or control. You know, this is not someone walking away during an argument or saying, hey, I need some space. I think sometimes survivors are like, well, I don't want to be giving the silent treatment. Am I giving the silent treatment by walking away? No, the intent with a silent treatment is to cut off communication to harm or control you. And I think nurses are doing this for several reasons. I mean, it basically conditions you to expect and ask less of a narcissist. If they cut you off anytime you approach meaningful conversations, they give you the silent treatment when you try to address issues or when you try to talk about meaningful things, when you're really trying to connect, and they essentially punish you by giving you the silent treatment, then you learn that asking for your needs to be met hurts. Mm-hmm. It ends up with physical pain. And so you try harder and harder to just avoid doing that. You ask for less and less. And so essentially it is them conditioning you to be easier to manipulate. Like an empty vessel is easier to steer.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the silent treatment, when they're doing it, it's grooming you. It is going, you know, let's see if she takes it. Okay, that one I lasted 4 days. Let's see if she'll go five. And how will she be? Can I be nice to her when I get back and, you know, bring her flowers? And will she take me back? They are testing you. Mm-hmm. It always starts with small dribbles, as you know. It's not like the 5 day no contact and silent treatment. It is just that you were supposed to be here at seven and you're not even answering my calls and you're freaking out thinking they're dead in the gutter and they're not, you know, responding. So it starts out like that. And then it ebbs into the 3 day and it ebbs into the week long and you're frantic and that putting that panic in your heart and them not responding, it just puts you into a tailspin of worry and yet freaking out. And when they come back, then it's your blame for it. Well, I wouldn't have had to done that if you didn't do X, Y, or Z. It always comes back to that. And the blame comes back in when they do come back. It was your fault. And again, like you said, I'll try harder. I'll push more. I'll never do that again. And you sit there and you are groomed to be the perfect supply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my clients, it's amazing how long it will last. I mean, it can go weeks, months, years. Mm-hmm. One of my clients recently told me his narcissistic wife has ignored him for basically given him a silent treatment for a couple of years. And they had a conversation recently about why. And she said, well, because you disrespected me in this conversation once. And it's almost hard to put your, you know, to wrap your mind around. So you don't talk to somebody for 2 years because they told you somehow in a conversation you felt disrespected and you think that's okay. Like the entitlement that comes through that, like this is a justifiable reason to give someone a silent treatment as if, you know, they had no responsibility in letting you know, hey, this hurt my feelings. It's just, you disrespected me, silent treatment. So that control.
Yeah, exactly. And again, they no accountability on their part to go, hey, you know what you just did, like to actually have communication and say, this is hurting me, this bothered me, let's fix this. I'll give you a chance to make an amends, right? They don't do that. It is off with your head, black and white thinking. You're either all good or all bad. And when you're in silent treatment, they're building up this case and probably smearing you all over town about it at the same time.
Yeah, you're right. Like telling everyone, you won't believe how they're treating me, what we're going through. Like, this is so hard on me. All the while, they're not doing the work. Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Our last one here is physical abuse. And while I have had many a clients with 14 broken ribs and plenty of, you know, physical abuse stuff, how often do you see it in narcissistic abuse?
You know, it can happen. It's more common with the malignant or sadistic types of narcissists. Like you said, I think the mental and emotional abuse is just as, if not worse. I don't really want to compare abuse, but it's just as bad, honestly. But with the physical abuse, the thing that stands out to me is if you're experiencing that from a narcissist, then you're dealing not only with the physical abuse, like and the things that lead up to that, the harassment, the stalking, the isolation. Yes. You're also dealing with all the other narcissistic abuse behaviors we're talking about. And I think that's what really stands out to me is it's never just the physical abuse. It is all the other stuff that's going on with it. And so, you know, as with all abusers, that purpose is they want dominance. They want to be powerful. They want to feel in control. I have seen or I've heard of clients having experiences with physical abuse when a narcissist really wants to maintain a certain image. Like if their image is really important in the community, so they will use those threats of violence or the slapping or the hitting, particularly if this is a narcissistic parent to their family, like they want to maintain a certain image and it's really important to them that they look a certain way. So they want to keep everybody in line and make sure everyone in the family knows, like, this is how we act in public and don't you dare embarrass me. Then those are some times when I've seen the physical abuse happen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a certain type. And that malignant definitely goes there, just this mischievous derelict. I mean, and again, a derelict, I'm not saying some, you know, creepy person. It could be a doctor. It could be a lawyer. It's just this dark, dark, like malevolent side to them that crosses over that line of sociopath where they don't care. It's, yeah, no big deal. I mean, that's sort of the line. Again, malevolent narcissist, high end, and then we get into more of your psychopaths, sociopaths, where they just have no remorse for it, and it's pretty powerful that they will go that far. But I'm glad that we're talking about it here because so many victims of narcissistic abuse don't really realize. I don't know that there's a percentage or an odd, you know, odds are you're going to get it. I think it's low, at least with the, you know, thousands of people I've worked with. But when it is, that's what they do, they will continue to do it over and over. And if it's not physical abuse, it could be sexual abuse. It could be financial abuse. It's all in the same genre of taking it up a notch. And so is there anything that we missed?
I think we covered it all. And you know, what's crazy is we just scratched the surface. I mean, we know like how much we can talk about, which is why we could keep going, but I'm really glad we were able to hit these. And I hope it was helpful to help people see like how many layers to narcissistic abuse there really is.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful for your book. Do you want to hold it up? So see what it's going to look like and they can pre-sale and they can pre-buy it, correct?
Yes, it's available for pre-order. And of course, there are some pre-order bonuses. There's two extra chapters. And then I'm doing a raffle for some signed copies and a free 80-minute coaching session with me as well. So if you want to pre-order, then you'll need to do that before August 15th. That's when the book is released. And it's, of course, we dive more into the narcissistic abuse strategies. I broke it up into three parts: understanding the narcissist, helping you heal from past and current traumas, and also teaching you the insights and strategies you need for post-traumatic growth. So I really tried to kind of break down my therapy coaching process into book form because I know some people can't afford it or just don't have access to a therapist who specializes in this. So if you get the book, really be able to go through that process and hopefully have some healing.
It's a great book, everybody. I really, really enjoyed the way, and what I also liked, and again, the examples are what we've been talking about today, mm-hmm. even more so in the book were the examples and stories of what this person mm-hmm. happened and this person, and they're all real short to digest them, but I think they help go, oh my God, that's my life. Oh, I just wrote in my, you know, sidebar. I know I have it written on here going, oh, that was my knife. And I always, everything I was writing in the manuscript was like, oh yeah, nailed it. Got it. Right. So, I suggest everybody go and get it. We'll put a link down below. And thank you so much for being with me today, Chelsea.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. Very glad to have the conversation.
Thank you. Well, I hope you found that helpful. I really like the part about her telling us the reason why they're doing these things. And when you get her book, we just got off the camera and we can talk all day. Her book covers so much of it, and you will get examples, you will get stories, you will get aha moment. So we'll put the link to her book down below. And thank you so much. If you like this video, please like and share it, and subscribe to my channel if you haven't. Again, this is Tracy Malone, and have a great day.